This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. In his State of the State address in January, Governor Peter Shumlin made a case for why he thinks Vermont should divest its pension plans of all stock connected to the coal industry and to one particular oil company he thinks is egregious.
Vermont should not wait to rid ourselves of our ExxonMobil stock. It has been clearly documented since the 1980s that ExxonMobil's own scientists have long known about the dangers of global warming and chose to conceal it from the public. At the same time that they were building their oil rigs taller to account for rising sea levels, they were funding front groups of scientists to deny that climate change is real. This is a page right out of Big Tobacco's, which for decades denied the health risks of their products while they were killing people. Owning ExxonMobil stock is not a business Vermont should be in. Let's sell it.
Let's sell it, he said, and let's get rid of any holdings in coal. The response was swift. Organizations like 350.org and the Sierra Club applauded the governor's call to action. But the state treasurer, Beth Pierce, said on this program days later that divestment is a bad financial policy and bad public policy. Yesterday, the governor went before the Vermont Pension Investment Committee to make his case more fully. And he wrested a commitment from the treasurer to fully vet the idea. Today on this show, we aim to do the same. We're going to hear from some advocates on why they think divestment is, in fact, good public policy and good financial policy. And we'll have the treasurer back on to defend her position. You can share your thoughts by commenting on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net or by calling 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. We're already getting lots of thoughts from people who have strong opinions on this issue. Susan says pension holders aren't the only ones who should be able to weigh in on divesting the pension. This money comes from the taxpayers of Vermont. It's abhorrent to me that my tax dollars are supporting the industry that's responsible for the destruction of this planet. Imagine where we'd be if the fossil fuel companies spent their money on research and development of renewables rather than searching for more oil and gas and funding 30 years of deceit. Dan in Burlington says, while I truly appreciate and respect the many good things Treasurer Pierce has done with respect to the state's clean energy initiatives, she's wrong on this debate. The net benefits of divestment are enormous across the board, now and far into the future. The assets of the fossil fuel companies must become stranded and the stock prices of those companies must fall. The alternative is we burn those assets. In that case, the performance of the pension fund will be a mere blip against the devastating human health impacts that the pension holders' kids will face living on a dying planet. But not everyone agrees with Dan and Susan. Jim emailed in to say, buy high, sell low. The governor sure has a winning strategy for the retirees of Vermont. And Dave says, this divestment silliness looks like pure hypocrisy to me. If people want to put an end to the use of fossil fuels, they should just stop using them. Instead, they try to make themselves feel better by divesting or by insisting that other people divest. It will do nothing to stop the use of fossil fuels. How about using electric lawnmowers instead of gas-powered? That would do much more to fight climate change. According to a Swedish study, spending an hour using a lawnmower creates as much pollution as a 100-mile car trip. Why don't they get solar panels and heat pumps for their houses? Why don't they drive hybrid cars? Again, you can share your thoughts with us, 1-800-639-2211. And I'm joined in the studio now by Vermont State Treasurer Beth Pierce and by Rob Kidd, Conservation Program Manager for the Vermont Chapter of the Sierra Club. It's a pleasure to have you both with us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jane.
So, Beth Pierce, before we get into the politics of this, can you just remind us how much of Vermont's mix is actually in coal holdings and ExxonMobil?
Certainly. 1.1 million approximately in coal positions and of that, about 800,000 plus in bonds, a little over $200,000 in direct holdings that we have with ExxonMobil.
And what would it actually take to get Vermont's coal holdings out of our stock mix?
Well, to begin with, I think there's we've had a mix of conversations, fossil fuels as a whole, and the VPIC, Vermont Pension Investment Committee, has done a study on that and believes that there would be significant cost to that. That is separate from taking a look at the coal in the specific mandate that the governor had in the State of the State and in some of the legislation. I also want to point out that 1.1 million is what is in the standard industry classification for coal. The governor's proposal is to mimic the California definition, which is a more limited definition of coal. And while it will change from day to day, our estimate is approximately $615 in that particular coal investment. What we need to do is take—
Wait a minute. To clarify that, so you were saying about what you have classified as a coal investment is about $1 million in the investment portfolio, and what the governor is saying, according to what the California standard would be, is $615?
The governor's standard for the California standard in their law has a much more limited definition of coal. And we've taken a look at what CalSTRS did, the teacher plan in California. They provided their holdings listing to us that met those definitions. And we believe that it is approximately $615 that we have in a coal position that meets the standard that was defined in the State of the State.
So almost nothing.
That is correct.
And your position remains that you think this is a bad idea.
Well, I think that divestment as a whole has issues that we need to take a look at. The fossil fuel, the entire industry, we've done a look. We have not done a specific look on coal. I've committed to looking at that. In a collaborative process, I'm pleased that Rob and I have been working on a number of issues together. I think that there were two issues. One, should the legislature do this? We believe that divestment decisions should be made by the investment committee itself, the Vermont Pension Investment Committee, charged as a fiduciary for these funds. So that's one. I'm pleased that the governor came to see us. I'm pleased that the resolution that I believe is being introduced urges us to do this, but recognizes that it belongs with VPIC, the Vermont Pension Investment Committee. Second, I want to do a deep dive into the coal and into the Exxon, the specific proposal that the governor has made, and do an analysis. And I've committed to a process through the VPIC, and I want to commend Tom Galanka, the chair of the VPIC committee. We're going to have a subcommittee and a collaborative process, bringing in 350, bringing in the Sierra Club and others, as well as stakeholders. And the stakeholders are the employee groups and the Vermont League of Cities and Towns, for instance, that puts money into the system.
Rob, I want to get you here in here, but Beth Pierce, just before we do, let me push you on that, because you've said before that you think that pushing for legislation that would require the Vermont Pension Investment Committee to divest or to make financial policy through the legislature or through the governor's office is a bad idea. So even if this is something that eventually is in the hands of VPIC, do you still think it's a bad idea for the governor and for the legislature to be the ones urging financial policy? And so then does it matter if it's divestment or not?
Well, I think that the issue is that VPIC was created as a vehicle by the legislature. And when you take a look at their charge, which is in state statute, it says the committee shall strive to maximize the total return on investment within acceptable levels of risk for public retirement systems in accordance with the standard of care established by the prudent investor rule. We're also an IRS tax-exempt trust, and the IRS rules say that it is impossible at any time prior to the satisfaction of all liabilities with respect to members and their beneficiaries, and that's important, for any part of the corpus or the income to be used or diverted to purposes other than the exclusive benefit of the members and their beneficiaries. I take that that's my job. I'm a trustee. When you have a retirement fund, a pension trust fund, it's not your money. It's not state money. It belongs to those beneficiaries, the 50,000 active, vested, and retired members of the state, the teacher, and the municipal system. I take that trust seriously. That's my job as treasurer, and my job to safeguard taxpayer funds and to safeguard this trust. And I believe that the VPIC, the Vermont Pension Investment Committee, is the vehicle the legislature established in the first place to make these decisions and should continue to rely on that that decision-making.
Rob Kidd, let's bring you in here. You're with the Sierra Club. The Sierra Club supports divestment, thinks this is a good idea, and in fact thinks this is good public policy and good financial policy. Can you just state your position for us?
Basically, yes, Jane. As a state, we at once can't be saying that we're serious about combating climate change at the same time that we are maintaining investments in the very companies that are the worst climate change offenders. So our goal is to align Vermont's pension investments with Vermont's clean energy goals so as to develop a low-carbon economy in Vermont and beyond. By divesting our state pension funds, we can set example worldwide and follow the suit of many financial institutions, colleges, universities, even in within Vermont, and even the Rockefellers, who recently divested from fossil fuels, or ExxonMobil, particularly with one of the heirs who recently came out in supporting of divesting from ExxonMobil. You know, we actually applaud the governor's remarks about divesting from coal and ExxonMobil as a start. We would like to see a broader process engaged, but is this the start? And the VPIC committee is going to look at it and look at it in detail and give us an opportunity to bring in some of our experts who have been studying this nationally and not just here in Vermont who can testify. We have a whole line of experts, and we just feel like over the years we haven't been given a fair opportunity to state those cases.
You mentioned colleges in Vermont that have divested, and Catherine Lothar, the chair of the Sustainability Committee at Goddard College, wrote in to say, "We divested the Goddard Endowment in January of 2015 by moving the funds from two mutual funds they were in to two fossil fuel-free mutual funds at Trillium Asset Management in Boston. There were no fees to move the money, and the funds are performing as well as or better than they did before divestment." About Tom Galanka's concern that there could be a $3 million fee to screen fossil fuel companies out of bundled stocks, there are already many fossil fuel-free mutual funds. VPIC does not need to create its own screens or funds. Rob Kidd, what makes you think, though, that divestment will actually have any impact on these companies that Vermont would be divesting from and on in global warming and the environmental issues that you care about?
Yes, well, divestment has been used for many years on many different other issues, particularly South Africa, where our investment decisions on divesting of that led to changing policies in South Africa. There's been some claims saying Don Hooper, a former state legislator who pushed the divestment legislation in here, basically claimed that he was told from people that if Vermont didn't divest – and all these other places didn't divest from South Africa, Nelson Mandela would have spent his life in jail and never reached light. That's what some people think. So there's been a history of this being able to change public policy. But it goes more than just changing the public policy. You know, if we're going to reach the accords from the climate change, the climate talks in Paris, we're going to have to keep all this fossil fuel in the ground, not allowing it to be used. And what's going to happen? They're going to be stranded assets. These assets are not going to be able to use, so it's going to see the value, all of those stock portfolios dropping even more than they have. So we see this as more of a combination effect where it's just – it's going to change the public policy. It's going to set the example that we're serious about addressing climate change and at the same time protecting our public pension funds.
We got a note on this from Christy in Waterbury who says, "How does divesting shares of stock actually hurt the companies you're targeting?" She says, "I see no direct effect. You can't quantify stigmatization, and Exxon doesn't really care who owns their shares since they've already received the money from the shares at an initial public offering. So you aren't hurting their wallet. In fact, I bet they'd rather have someone who doesn't care about the environment own their shares compared to Vermont, the little state that roars." Rob, and then Beth, I'll come back to you. Rob.
Yeah, that is definitely an argument some folks use, but it's the pathway that we're creating. We're setting an example that we are not going to be complicit with companies that support activities that are changing our climate.
So it doesn't matter whether it has an effect on the companies. It's about a moral stance.
It's about a moral stance, but we also see it will change the value of the public's perception of these particular companies. You know, you see the value when people divested from tobacco. It brought another change where people were like, wait, nobody wants to invest in this filthy product that is killing people. It's the same thing with oil and fossil fuels, coal. It's like this product is eventually – causing a whole line of problems in our society here.
And we should point out, the governor mentioned yesterday in speaking with the Vermont Pension Investment Fund that Vermont has divested in the past in areas like this. Tobacco holdings, companies that made money in South Africa and Sudan, companies as well. So at least three there that we've had divestment in the past. So to Rob's point, Beth Pierce.
Well, I'd like to make two points. First, going back to the comment about selling the shares. it does not have an impact on the share price. In fact, the gentleman who testified in front of government operations from Trillium Investments the other day in the conversation about whether selling those $200,000-plus dollars worth of stock, his comment was that they would be gobbled up. And frankly, they would. And for me, gobbling those up by someone who does not care about the climate would be a shame. I had the opportunity to go to the ExxonMobil meeting and to tell the chair of the committee that I thought his approach to renewable energies was, quote, wholly inadequate. Now, we did not prevail in a shareholder resolution there. We did, on the other hand, prevail with a 98% acceptance rate over at BP and the and others. So we need to continue to put the pressure on them. And I'm not sure why it's conceived that an outside pressure looking in is different than an inside pressure. Frankly, I think that
But it didn't work with ExxonMobil. So what inside pressure are you actually putting on them?
Actually, it has worked over the past. They have made changes. Companies have made significant changes. This is the start of a process. I'm not sure that you can make a comment from the outside that it has worked. And the inside, you have the opportunity to collectively take your investment dollars. I'm a part of a group called the Investment Network for Climate Risk, and to leverage our dollars. And we've made significant changes in greenhouse gas emissions, for instance, in the area of palm oil. Getting back to the other section of the question on the other types of divestment activities, the governor is correct that in 1986, 30 years ago, we did divest through a legislative action with South Africa. But I would point out since then, investment statutes have changed. The vehicle for making those investment changes have changed. There have been changes in clarifications of positions from the IRS and the Department of Labor around the issues of investments. And frankly, in 1997, the divestment decision was not made by the legislature. It was made by the retirement boards who at the time were charged with making those investments. In reading through the minutes of the meetings, it's clear to me that the deputy treasurer at the time took the time to do a study with the investment managers to take a look at the risks in the portfolio, the impact on return, the issues around the lawsuits that were happening in tobacco and some of the litigation that was happening with the attorneys generals across the country, and made an informed decision. I want to do the same thing here. And by the way, the Sudan divestment, which is a very limited divestment approach, was also done by VPIC, the Vermont Pension Investment Committee. So you've got to go back 30 years to find a precedent, and the last two were done by the appropriate authority charged with making the investment decisions. For me, I want to go through the same process, a deliberative, thorough, thoughtful approach, because this is not my money. This money belongs to the beneficiaries of those systems, and I've made a commitment to retirement security for those individuals going forward. I've also made a commitment to the environment. One of your emails said that we've done a great deal with local investments on energy. I'm a member of Investment Network for Climate Risk. I want to have a good, clean environment going forward and retirement security for every single Vermonter.
We're going to talk more about this question of morality, though, and what the responsibility is between making the most money you can for your clients, for the investors, versus this idea of what the state should be doing. Madeline and Naomi in Moncton said, "We support Governor Shumlin's initiative to divest from fossil fuels and feel very strongly that whatever financial losses may be incurred, they are not as important as fighting climate change. If the choice is between financial security and the future of the planet, the answer is clear. No economic considerations matter if there is no planet." On the other hand, Will in Lincoln says, "I'd like to point out a fact that's being neglected in this debate. This is not the state's money we're talking about. This money belongs to people like my wife, who has worked for the state and contributed to the pension system for 32 years. The state's primary responsibility is to act as fiduciary for the people who now or in the future draw old age pensions from the fund." Share your thoughts with us, 1-800-639-2211, or post a note on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. Beth Pierce is Vermont's state treasurer. Rob Kidd is the conservation program manager at the Vermont chapter of the Sierra Club. They're helping us understand why they see things differently on the idea of divestment. The governor wants the state's pension plans to be divested from coal holdings and from ExxonMobil stock. Rob Kidd agrees with the idea. Treasurer Pierce does not. Where do you stand? Call 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211, or post a note on the Vermont Edition Facebook page. Eric Becker is Chief Investment Officer of Clean Yield Asset Management. He's calling into the show today. Hi, Eric. Nice to talk with you.
Hi. Thanks, Jane.
Hi. So
I'm calling to push back on the notion that divesting from fossil fuel stocks or coal stocks in particular has a negative impact on the financial performance of the pension funds. I think there's an assumption out there that fossil fuel companies always make lots of money for their investors, but that's not necessarily been true. And there's been increasing evidence and studies that have come out that shows that that's not the case. We helped participate in a study of the Vermont fund that showed that if the fund had divested 3 years ago from all fossil fuel stocks, the top 200 coal, oil, and gas companies, that there would be $77 million more dollars in the fund today than there actually are. And there have been new fossil fuel-free indexes that have come out, both domestic U.S. funds or indexes as well as foreign indexes, that have performed a little bit better than the standard benchmarks with slightly lower risk going back 10 or 11 years. And so I just want to challenge that notion that by divesting, we are going to be hurting pensioners or beneficiaries of the pension plans, when in fact the evidence is that you can actually lower risk by divesting. So I think that's an important thing to note in this conversation.
That's Eric Becker. He's Chief Investment Officer of Clean Yield Asset Management. Eric, thanks for calling in. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Treasurer Pierce, and then Rob Kidd will come back to
you. I'd like to respond to that, the $77 million that's been bandied about. And that's why I want this to be a thorough study done by within the context of VPIC. We took a look at that study. It's called The Decarbonizer. We heard testimony from the gentleman, one of the gentlemen involved with that project at GovOps, and then we also provided testimony. The $77 million number just isn't correct. We provided testimony on that number as well as the number that was provided previously on coal. They looked at 32% of our portfolio. They didn't take into consideration certain investment vehicles. It just is not a correct number. Now, I would be happy if Eric would like to come to our committee, go over that number, and we can have investment professionals talk that through. But when you start to bandy about numbers that haven't been properly vetted, that's where you start the danger. It's doing this by soundbite, doing this by news media. This should be a logical, thorough, complete process involving the give and take from different investment professionals.
But we just heard from Goddard College, who says, look, we've done it and we're still seeing a good return.
Well, Goddard College had two mutual funds and moved to two other mutual funds. And by the way, the two mutual funds they had were an in-state investment vendor that they moved to another one. So they made a choice there. I don't have their exact numbers, but I'm going to guess that it's someplace around a million, certainly not in the $4 billion range that we have. We also have commingled funds. We have different investment vehicles that are much more complex. There's a group out there called the Aperio that did a study, and it speaks to the types of things that were done at Goddard and the types of things that we're looking at. And they actually put out a report called Fossil Fuel Divestment Spin Doctors Gone Wild, and the discussion on both sides. And it gets to my point that when you make a simple statement that I did it with this amount of money with two mutual funds versus something that has 22-plus managers and 30-something different buckets, some of which are illiquid assets, some of which are commingled assets, it is not a apples-to-apples comparison.
Rob Kidd, you jump in here. I can see that you want to.
Yeah, I want to actually add on to what Beth is saying is yes, these numbers need to be vetted. We the Sierra Club 350 Vermont, VPIRG, Clean Yield Assets, have a whole host of experts who are experts on this. I am not an expert myself, but they've been able to review all these numbers, and they haven't had the opportunity to present the in a debate fashion or a fashion where the numbers are vetted. Last July, a VPIC meeting took place, and we were giving very little bit of an opportunity to present any evidence. It was just a challenging process. So we're happy that here that the Treasurer and VPIC had agreed to create a process. Now we're still wondering what that process is going to be like, but we're happy at least that part is coming out, because we do agree that the numbers are out there that we need to be clear and they need to be vetted. But it's evidentiary that all the stocks are going down. Oil stocks are going down. We had Michael Dworkin come in and testify from Vermont Law School, former Public Service Board chair. He testified that that is the trajectory. So we need to protect our pension funds, not just rely on old data that was happening from many years ago.
Well, let's go to the calls here. We've got a lot of listeners who want to weigh in. Joe's calling in from South Hero. Hi, Joe. Go right ahead.
Hello. I'm a retired teacher, and this is our money, not the state's. The representative of the Sierra Club keeps stating it's our money and our decision. It's neither. It's not their money, and it is not their decision. I'd like to thank Treasurer Pierce for honoring her fiduciary responsibilities in this matter and not buckling to outside groups who, it's again, it's not their money. If you do agree with the argument on global warming, you shouldn't be selling the stocks. You should be shorting the stocks. And in order to short the stocks, you have to own them. So there's no reason to divest even for investment purposes. You have to own something to short it. And so if people are saying that coal's going down, oil's going down, if you agree with that, that's all well and good. You even then, under those circumstances, you should own it.
Joe, I take your point. I appreciate that, hearing from you, a pension holder. Let's also go to Vaughn. Vaughn, you're in the system as well, calling in from Williston.
I am in the system, and full disclosure, I'm also a member of VPIC. Hi, Beth. I'm speaking here as a citizen and not as a VPIC member. As far as VPIC goes, we'll do a study, and if it shows that the divestment breaks even or improves our risk-adjusted return, that's absolutely what we should do. But that's the criterion. We have a fiduciary responsibility. It's very clear. It's laid out. What I don't understand, and I've tried to get an answer many times, is how divestment actually reduces the consumption of carbon. I mean, I don't see why. It's happened in a number of places. There's not the slightest evidence I'm aware of that 1 mile has been driven less in a gas-powered car, or 1 calorie of electricity has not been used, and so on and so forth. And so, if people want to make an argument about the economics of it, that this is a good economic move, we have an obligation to examine that carefully, and will. I would take exception with the notion that the other process wasn't transparent. Treasurer Pierce has a stack of everything we've ever received, and I looked through it at the meeting yesterday, and I'd already seen all of it, so it was hardly hidden from people. But I really, really don't understand how shaming or whatever it is translates into lower energy use.
Well, Vaughn, that's a good point to put to Rob Kidd with the Sierra Club. Rob, what do you think? This, again, goes back to the idea of why do you think divestment works? And to Vaughn's point, how does it actually help the issue of trying to get people to use less fossil fuel?
Well, the more we divest from fossil fuels, the more we move away from that and transition ourselves to non-fossil fuel uses or low-carbon fossil fuel uses, the more likelihood we'll succeed in our goals. So basically, the public participation in divesting from these, while people are simultaneously looking for alternatives, is a great thing. I mean, Vermont is a leader in transitioning. Our clean energy goals are 90% renewables by 2050. You know, the Agency of Transportation is being aggressive about pushing more money towards electric vehicles. So we're at the Sierra Club are advocating for a lot of these different policies. Simultaneously, we're not just looking at divesting from fossil fuels. We're looking at supporting renewables, supporting alternative energy, supporting alternative transportation, and finding these different ways that we can work together on these.
We also got a note from Climate Hawk One, who says, I strongly favor divestment. Vermont has committed, as Rob just said, to an energy plan that calls for 90% fossil-free energy use by 2050. Other states and countries around the world will have to do the same to stop climate change. It doesn't make sense to invest Vermonters' hard-earned retirement savings in an industry that is ultimately doomed and that is bad for our environment and our planet. This is an issue that is not going away. It will only grow in importance over time. We should step up and divest now.
A couple of things I'd like to address. One is the vetting process that we are looking going forward to. And I am committed. You know, a few years back, we did something called a local investment working group. And folks from all over the state came in. We provided the coffee. And and the result of that is we now have over $30 million of investments, local investments in housing and energy. And I think that that's important. Everything that we do in Vermont that we get done well is when we collaborate and work together. I am thrilled with the fact that we will have the opportunity to take a look at the investment data that you have, investment data from other professionals.
The investment data that the Sierra Club has?
The Sierra Club or Clean Yield or this decarbonizer group and others, as well as other industry experts. Bring that together and have a full vetting of that. And I've committed to folks that we will have that process. That's how we get things done in Vermont. That's not the Washington, D.C. way of doing things. That's the Vermont way, and I'm proud of that. And as part of that, I want to get this in. I know we're going to get a little short on time. One of the projects, one of the offshoots of working together on this is that the Sierra Club is partnering with the Treasurer's Office on a project to force more disclosure, environmental disclosure by companies. Vermont Treasurer's Office was a petitioner to the SEC several years ago to require more environmental disclosure. In 2010, they created regulations. We'd like to work with the SEC to see if there are ways we can improve compliance by companies. Rob brought this to his group, and I'll let him talk about that. We're excited that they want to join with us on this project.
Yes, we fully support the Treasurer Pierce on her efforts on full disclosure with the SEC, and something we agree upon with her, and we look forward to working with her and on many of her other projects. So we're not opposing her on that and everything else. We just disagree with the divestment. But what we would like to see is a fully open process and a process that gets us to yes. What's happened before is it's been a process of no. And this is Vermont is a proud state where we're known to getting things done. So let's get it done. Let's do it now. Let's divest first from coal.
Well, on that point, do you have any faith that you can get to yes or that you can get an honest assessment? We know that Treasurer Pierce is coming from a position where she doesn't think this is a good idea. And we've heard from VPIC that it's not something that they've supported as well. So do you believe that you'll get an honest vetting and a fair vetting?
Well, it was just announced yesterday. So we're not sure of the details of how they want to proceed with this. So we're going to need to look at it further. I haven't even discussed this with my leaders at the Sierra Club, and I know my friends at 350 Vermont and VPIRG, VBSR, and other groups haven't fully looked at the idea, but we would like to maybe figure out a way that this could be a fair and balanced process.
If I could respond to that quickly, bottom line for me is I want a full, fair vetting of the process, and it shouldn't be coming to no or coming to yes. It should be what are the issues. I'm not going to, as a fiduciary, I have a responsibility to look at the facts and not politics. And to the end result, all I can guarantee is that I will work with you, Rob. I will work with 350. And I appreciate the work you folks have done in making awareness about climate change. That's extraordinarily important. I thank 350. I thank you for that. Let's work together so that we have climate change to remediate the issues there and a secure environment and retirement security. I'm committed to working with you on that and look forward to that.
That's Beth Pierce. She's Vermont State Treasurer. Rob Kidd is the Conservation Program Manager at the Vermont Chapter of the Sierra Club. Thank you both for talking with us about divestment today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jane. I look forward to more.
coming up, new changes proposed by the Public Service Board would increase the amount of small-scale solar projects allowed in the state. We'll learn more about these new net metering rules next on Vermont Edition. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. 2 years ago, the legislature significantly increased the amount of renewable energy customers were allowed to sell back to their power companies. The idea was that by raising the net metering caps, there would be enough time to draft new rules that could address the question of distributed power generation. But those limits have already been reached, and some utilities have stopped accepting new solar producers. A new draft of the update to the net metering rules was just released by the Public Service Board, and we're joined now by Public Service Department Deputy Commissioner John Kopans to look at what they say. Welcome to the program. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Jane. Happy to be here.
So these are rules that are supposed to go into effect in 2017, next year. What's their aim?
The aim of this program, first, a little bit of perspective on the current net metering program. As you acknowledged by the fact that certain utilities have already hit their 15% cap, the program has really been an enormous success story. We have over 6,000 net metered projects around the state and actually more participants in net metering because some of those projects have more than one participant. So it's been a real success story. And the power of net metering is it's a customer-driven process, right? Customers decide they want to invest in renewables, and they put it on the rooftop, put it in their yard, or invest in a community system. So it's been a real success. That said, it is time. We have an opportunity now to transition to, I would say, a more nuanced and improved net metering program. And there are a couple of things. The legislature actually initiated this process in Act 99 all the way back in 2014. And there are a couple of things that will be embedded in this new rule that help us achieve some broader public policy goals.
So the idea here is to use what's already been good about net metering and be able to expand it, but also to have a little bit of a different sort of control over it in some ways.
I would say both a different control over it. I mean, let's look at the fact that the current net metering program has a cap. That's actually not great because, as you acknowledge, there are now certain utility service territories where Vermonters cannot take advantage of net metering because that utility is now capped. We would like to build a sustained program where we can avoid this sort of boom-bust cycle where we build quickly and then we hit a cap and then it drops off. What we think we can build into this new rule is a more sustained program where it grows over time and where all Vermonters have the opportunity to take advantage of net metering.
I want to point out and remind people that the Public Service Board and the Public Service Department are two separate entities. So what role is the Public Service Department, which you're a part of, playing in helping the board come up with these new rules?
I very much appreciate you pointing out that distinction. The legislature charged the Public Service Board with drafting these new rules. They are the ones who will ultimately and are ultimately doing that work and really doing a great job of engaging stakeholders, floating proposals, and getting feedback and reacting to that feedback. The department ultimately has participated in that process as a stakeholder. The board issued an initial draft in December, and the department, I think it was early to mid-January, we proposed some changes to that initial draft, some restructuring to that initial draft that got at a couple of issues that we thought needed to be addressed. The board has now issued a new rule as of Friday. We will share additional feedback with them on that rule as they proceed with the formal rulemaking process.
So let's get into a little bit of what is in this new rule. And it's a draft, as you said, and there will be a time for public comments as well. The draft rules address net metering moving forward. And can you you know, this is a 42-page rule, but somewhat simply, can you explain moving forward, starting in 2017, should these rules go through, what the net metering policy is going to be?
Sure. From in a general sense, here are a couple of the broader policy goals that will be embedded in this new rule. The current program right now, there are when you generate renewable energy, there's something produced along with that renewable energy called a renewable energy certificate, commonly known as a REC. Right now, typically customers are holding on to those RECs. And the reason is they – if they were to transfer those RECs to the utility – so that the utility could claim credit for that renewability, the customer – there is no difference in how much the customer is compensated, no matter how the REC is treated in the current program. At the legislature's direction, there in the new program will be a value affixed to that renewable energy credit. And that means that it is much more likely that the utilities then, because there's a value and the utility will compensate projects at a greater rate because they are getting the RECs and because those RECs have value, it's much more likely that the utilities will then get those renewable energy certificates and that the utility can then claim that as Vermont strives to meet its renewable energy goals. That's an important difference between what will likely be in the new rule and what's in the current program.
Can the utilities then sell those RECs?
No. Under net metering, they absolutely cannot. The legislature was very clear that those RECs need to be retired.
Okay.
Second thing that is in this new rule that the department is very excited about is some differential in what these projects will pay depending on where they're sited. The truth is it's more expensive to put a project on a rooftop, a small project on a rooftop versus a larger ground-mounted project. There are also different impacts to a rooftop project versus a ground-mounted project. A program that is more nuanced, that pays more for those projects that help us meet our public policy goals and are more expensive to develop makes a lot of sense. So we're encouraged that in the new draft there is a significant difference in what we will pay for these net meter projects depending on both how they treat the RECs and where the projects are sited.
So it sounds from the rules like if you are building a project on a rooftop or on a capped landfill or on land that is in some way not suitable for agricultural use, so, you know, a brownfield, for example, that is treated, as you said, differently than somebody who's putting up a solar array in a what could be a farm field. Mm-hmm. And so am I to assume that what you're saying here is that, that it'll pay more because you're utilizing land that can't be utilized in another way?
That's correct. Absolutely. Yep.
Is that a way to get around needing to have more local input for things like solar siting? This has become a big issue lately.
To me, it's not a way to get around it, but it absolutely addresses some of those concerns. Again, the current net metering program pays a set amount no matter where that project is located. What we have heard from Vermonters and what the Solar Siting Task Force very much heard and agreed with is that we ought to be paying different rates for projects depending on what their potential impacts are. So in my mind, this is very much going to drive how developers are siting their projects. So it will go a long way to resolving those concerns that local communities have. Because remember, net metering has been a huge successful program, and that net metering program is driving so much of our renewable energy development around the state.
You know, we know from the VPR poll results that Vermonters are paying close attention to issues around renewable energy and siting, so it probably doesn't surprise you that we've been getting notes coming in before the show about this topic. Amanda says, net metering has helped many Vermonters go solar. If we hope to see real change and gains in the future, we need to build on this progress, not pull back. Philip says, small-scale renewable energy is arguably the best way to move away from fossil fuels. The state should be doing everything in its power to make it easy for any household to utilize renewable energy. From solar, which at the moment is still only 1% of all electricity used in Vermont, to small residential wind turbines, which is virtually non-existent in Vermont, are extraordinarily expensive and are a nightmare to fill out all of the paperwork. The net metering laws in the state were designed to make that plunge into renewables, and because of them, thousands of Vermont homes were able to go solar. But decreasing the amount in which the state buys back the energy and not extending the grandfather clause will not only hinder Vermonters' ability to take the next step to renewables, it will cripple small-scale Vermont renewable industries. Now, John, one of the things that was really important in these new rules is how they address that issue of grandfathering and people who have already invested in small-scale renewable projects or even medium-scale renewable projects. So can you just tell us what's in the rules on grandfathering?
The current draft says that people have the – if somebody has built a net metered project, they have that sort of rate of payment for 10 years. honestly, the department is a little bit concerned that that those customers should be given greater assurance actually beyond that 10-year time span, because somebody may not have paid back their system by 10 years. So that has been a point of conversation with the board as they work on that draft rule. Is 10 years sort of enough assurance, or do current customers need greater assurance?
Are you planning to go back to the board and suggest to them that they need to do something different to increase that security?
I would say this will certainly be a point of conversation, because we think it's very important that current customers who've made current investments get compensated under the rules that they made that investment. Those rules shouldn't change midstream for them. And that's both important for those customers. It's also important for the overall confidence in the system. These systems are often financed, and you want to reduce the cost of financing by increasing the confidence in the program.
That's John Compans, Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Public Service. He's been telling us about what's in the new draft net metering rules just released by the Public Service Board. We'll put a link up to them on the Vermont Edition Facebook page. Thank you so much for being on the program.
Thank you so much, Jane. Appreciate the opportunity.
Now, tomorrow on the show, legalizing pot in Vermont. It's a controversial issue that lawmakers have been debating this week, and we'll take up the debate, too. You can email your thoughts on legalization to vermontedition@vpr.net, and then listen to the show live at noon. I'm Jane Lindholm. Thanks for listening today.